Hello and welcome to the One Board Podcast. I am Rick White and I am joined by Ryan Gutowski, a man who always wears tiger striped tights, and Bob Crowell, a man whose beard has been sung about in the streets of Sri Lanka since the year 2002. Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
People never know that I'm wearing them because I wear those tights up under my clothes.
I've seen them.
It's nice.
What does Bob mean in Sri Lankan?
Oh, the bearded one?
that sounds pretty accurate.
That's good.
Yeah.
So how are you doing, Rick?
I am doing well. You know, started back in school, so I'm trying to adjust to, you know, not napping during the middle of the day. I think that's, working's not even the problem, it's not napping.
That's interesting.
And because it gets frowned upon at work, so that's been my biggest adjustment.
I don't know that life where you can just nap in the middle of the day.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
that's pretty nice. Amazing.
So we always start the show with what have we been playing? And today, because we have three of us, we're going to talk about one of the games that we really enjoy right now that we're working with. So, Rick, you want to go first, man?
Sure, I am ready to go first. So the game that I've been playing lately, or a game I played lately, is Histrio. And Histrio, I'll find who that's from here in a second, but it is the game that has the most fancy components I've seen in a long time. So it's got it's a game of kind of card worker placement. It was put out by Bombix, I think is how you say it, back in 2016. But basically there's a board with eight different locations, and you've got a card. Everybody has cards that matches those locations, and each round you put out some different cards that you're trying to earn. And the whole point of the game is to put on a play. You're a director and you're recruiting artists and acrobats and things, and you're trying to put on a play that appeals to the king. And so on a turn, you'll put down one of the location cards face down to show where you want to go. And if you are the only one that goes there, you get the cards that are at that location. If somebody else went with you, those cards are instead going to impact the king's mood, and you won't get any cards, but you'll get these little bonus cards and things. And so your job is to try to draft actors that each have different like levels of power and have a few like side skills as well, and have the most tragic or the most comedic show and have that be matching the king's mood. The thing that's really cool about it is there's this very intricate stage that's used, and it has a little dial on the back that you rotate to show if the king is in a good mood or a bad mood. And I thought it was like completely overdone. I was like, there's no need for this. But then I realized there's also part of the game where you put like little roosters on the stage to represent like your directors or your producers or something like that. And whenever the mood changes, you do the rotation, and that sweeps all the directors off the stage.
Nice.
And returns them to your hand so that you can play them again. When I finally realized that, because I was looking through the rule book, I was like, how do we get these directors back? How does that work? And I was like, oh, no way. This actually has a purpose. So it's pretty fun. A little more. It looks like it's going to be more to it than it really is. But I had a good time. The art's really cool. The pieces are incredibly well done. It's one I've owned for a while and finally got to the table when my in-laws came over. And I had a really good time with it.
That's really awesome. I saw, now that I'm thinking about it, I saw it on our Instagram feed that you had a picture of it. I was like, are you playing with puppets? Like, what are you doing?
It does look like that. It actually does look like that. I've seen the components. And I will say they are very colorful and very well done.
Yeah, it's one of those two. Like it feels, I don't know. It feels like a kid's game, and I really do think I think Kindle would really like this game.
Yeah,
because it is incredibly colorful. The art is very kid friendly to me. It's one of those where you're like, this feels like it's made for kids, but the components feel too nice for it to be for children kind of thing. It's really well done. I'm kind of surprised, and maybe I just wasn't in the right circles, but I feel like it's a game that might would have gotten more attention than it really did. But it's one that I plan to keep for a very long time and maybe play with some other people. I think it's one that has great table presence.
That's cool. Does it now, about how long does the game take? Is it a 30-minute game or is this an hour-long game?
I would say, you know, if we played it again with the same people, once we learned how to play it, it'd be a nice 30 minutes. But it was like 45 playing it the first time.
Yeah.
And now that I know and I've played it myself, I think explaining the rules will go a lot easier as well.
Oh, yeah. Once you play something through once, it can completely change the play time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I've been playing Whistle Stop. Actually, Bob, you have a copy of Whistle Stop, correct?
I do, and I love that game.
Yeah.
And Rick has wanted a copy of Whistle Stop, but can't find one.
Oh,
well,
no.
You should have got it. Should have got it Black Friday, man. So I got this on a Black Friday sale over, I think, Miniature Market. And Whistle Stop is basically a train game. But I know most people think of like Ticket to Ride or something like that when they think train games. But what you're doing is you've got control over a couple pastel colored trains, and you're going from east to west across this map, and the map fills out with these hexagons as you go. So as you take the train route, you're going to stop for resources, but when you run to the edge of the map, you're actually going to install new tiles onto the map. So you've got this big gap in the left and right of the middle of the map, and you're filling those in with different pieces. So it's really cool. There's not a lot of take that in it, but there are ways where you can position yourself where you're going to get certain resources and you re-divert somebody else's train somewhere else because of what you put in there.
Totally.
It's really nice. I mean, one of the things that I love about this game is the, like, there, if you look around online and look at people's opinions of Whistle Stop, I feel like a lot of people were turned off by the pastel colors and everything. But I feel like the mechanics of the game work really, really well because you're collecting at these different stopping points, these different cities, you're collecting shares of stock in the train system. So you may collect blue shares or black shares or red shares or yellow for the different train lines. And those different shares are going to pay off at the end. If you have the most of that specific color stock at the end of the game, you're getting 15 points. So what happens is people will try to get shares of stock right before they turn, right before they deliver all their stuff to all the way west on the edge of the map so that they can kind of like grab stock as a last thing before they go out. And it was a lot of fun. We played with our buddy Jacob Kuhn, who is a friend of ours and came out to Columbus to visit. We met at Origins this past year, and Jacob and I played, and he snuck past me, man. In the end, I think he beat me by just a couple of points, but he took me out at the end by grabbing a piece of stock in his last turn that really sealed it for me. So, oh man, it was tough, but it was a lot of fun.
The main mechanic, I don't know if you mentioned it, Ryan, is pick up and deliver.
Yeah. Pick up and deliver game. So you're getting cubes, you're using resources like coal and whistles to power your train to pick up cubes and then deliver the cubes for points or stock or whatever you'd like.
Yeah.
You know, you're always trying to help the cube farmers. I mean, I know, you know, my dad farmed cubes his entire childhood, and it was always very difficult to find people to come out and pick them up and deliver them across the country. So I'm glad you're doing that work there, Ryan.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, so picking up those cubes, that's where the little bit of take that can come into play. You may get to something before someone does. You may deliver something somewhere where someone had plans to do so, or you may lay a tile that completely reroutes them. And it's funny you mentioned that, Ryan, because I actually played with someone who owns the copy as well, and they actually mentioned painting the trains.
Really? Okay.
Yes, because the pastel was such an issue for them. And I understand, you know, some people have trouble with colors like that are like that close and, you know.
Yeah, it's not the most beautiful of games. I mean, you can tell that there's some issues with colors, and there's some issues with, like, it could have been better, but I think the mechanics of the game are just so solid.
Totally
Aaron
agree.
And I Aaron and I love playing it as a two-player game. I haven't played Whistle Stop as a four-player game
yet.
Well,
you need to have me
which
over.
Which is what I'm... Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that because I feel like it would get even more cutthroat than it currently is.
It most certainly would.
So with two players, it's actually a really solid game. There's some back and forth there, and then you almost have to abandon some of your goals as you're going because somebody else is because the other player is just exceeding what you thought they could do. Mm. So,
and I've actually never played it as two player. I've only played
it's pretty
it as
good.
Four player.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Okay. I need to definitely try that out then because I played it four times. I played it once this week and then a couple times before Christmas when we first got it. I love it. Whistle Stop's great.
It's a very good game.
So what you been playing,
Sweet.
Man?
Well, the number one game off of my top five is what I have been playing lately. And that is Architects of the West Kingdom. And I cannot say enough about this game. I am a huge fan of worker placement. It's just, besides dice placement, I guess it's kind of one of the same thing, except instead of placing workers, you're placing dice. But I just love putting something out on the board, getting something back for it, and then taking that thing and turning it into something else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's quintessential worker placement. And that's what Architects is. There are a few twists that I've not quite seen in worker placement games before, such as it's got all your normal spots like the forest, the quarry, the brick, the place to get brick, the place to get money, and you're placing your guys out on the board. You start with 20 meeples. You have a workforce of 20 meeples.
Oh, yeah.
And the cool thing about this is... when you put a worker out in a spot on the board, you're not blocking anyone out. Like, it's not, that spot's not taken. What happens is you're leaving your worker there, and then on your next turn, if you should happen to go back there, you're going to get what's at that spot plus extra because now you have more people there.
Nice.
So if you're going for one type of resource like stone, the more people you put on there, you're going to get extra stones each time until maybe you've put five turns in a row, you've dropped five people there, and when you go there, you're getting six stone. So it allows someone to grab what they need to do what they need to do, but they Shem Phillips and SJ McDonald put a mechanic in here where... you know, it sounds like it can get a little out of hand. What happens when all your people are in one spot, etc.? There's a spot in the game, the town center, where you can actually go and say, for instance, Ryan's taking turns and he's getting $15 a turn because he has so many people gathering money. And I've had it. I'm tired of Ryan doing that. So,
you know, we've all said that about Ryan in the game before.
I've had it. You can actually visit the town center on the board and arrest groups of meeples so based on how many people you have in the town center. So if I put one person in the town center, I pay money, but then I can go to a single spot and gather all meeples of the same color and put them on my own player board in sort of like a county jail. Because there is a federal jail. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, because then I can take your meeples from my player board and go and visit the main jail board and dump your meeples in there for money.
Nice.
So it basically is a way to clear the board and get yourself money by taking out other people off the board. But it also helps bring your own meeples back, too, because you don't want to run out of meeples. And there's just so many different ways to victory points. This is, and like I said, this is the reason why it was the number one game on my top five. I literally cannot get enough of playing this game.
That's awesome, man.
So does that have anything to do, like, looking at the box art and it immediately, of course, reminds me of Garp Hill's other game, Raiders of the North Sea. Are they related?
They are not related, but they are... that is Shem Phillips and SJ McDonald, who did the Raider series, the trilogy. And mm-hmm. this is Architects is next. And then from Architects, he has another release coming out called Paladins of the West Kingdom. And S.J. MacDonald, the guy who works with Garfield as well, just released this awesome dice placement game, dice mitigation game, on Kickstarter. And mm-hmm. I had no clue about it. And I was like, what is this? And I went and looked at it. I'm trying to remember the name here. I don't know. Sarcadian's First Light. And it just went on to Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And it's by the same guys. And I watched the video. And it is just, it looks like phenomenal dice placement. So these guys are just churning out, like, hits after hits, and I'm digging it, so.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very excited about playing this with you whenever we get together.
Yes, I cannot wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I've heard so many good things about this, and you putting it number one on your top five list, I definitely want to check it out.
It's tough to do. Those top five, top anything, it's like, there were so many great releases this year. It's like, how do you whittle that down and say, this is definitively it, you know?
Yeah, yep. And that was one that came in late, too, because you only played it, what, 3-4 weeks ago?
That's how much it impressed me.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, but I felt so bad leaving other things off my list, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I'll just make a top 500 of the year, no big deal.
I'm just going to make a top 200, all right, Ron? You don't mind.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. We have enough space on our servers for that. So, well, we are going to get into the topic of the show in just a moment. So after this break, we're going to be talking about microgaming. What is microgaming? And what kind of microgames should you have in your pocket? So we'll see you on the other side of this break. We are back. Rick, why don't you explain microgaming? This is actually a topic that you wanted to talk about because you've been playing a lot of microgaming lately. How would we define that?
So I looked up a bunch of definitions for microgames.
No, you're supposed to start with Merriam-Webster defines microgaming as.
Yes.
Isn't that how every high school speech starts?
Yeah. Yes. Albert Einstein once said that microgaming is no. So I think generally as a gamer, microgames are kind of, if you ever go to the game store and there's those packs of games that are really small and sit up at the front and you're like, oh, these aren't worth anything. I don't want to grab these. They can't be that good because they're so small. Microgames, I think, are usually games that have very small components. They fit in a small box. And usually, I would say 20 to 30 minutes, 30 minutes probably pushing it a little bit as far as the time limit of the game. So, you know, we're talking something that is portable. We're talking something that is going to be easy to teach and simple to play. That's kind of what we're looking at with microgames. And the reason that I've been doing a lot of work with this is because I'm doing my board game creation class that I've been doing the past couple of years. And one thing that has been a big issue has been the students have always spent too much time making components for their games. And so this year we focused on microgames in order to ensure that they did more playtesting. And it's already paid off. I've got two groups of students that have already been playtesting and they're having a great time. They're not really going, they're more making games that are more standard and they just didn't make as much. Like, it's kind of like, I've made apples to apples with half the cards kind of thing, which is not quite going with what we were trying to do, but,
it's a worse version of this other game.
They've put their own spin on it, and they've had fun. Like, one group made what they called a different version of Uno, but they added different things where, like, if somebody has a 9 down, that, like, you have to speak in accents, and if somebody puts a 7 down, that nobody can talk at all. That was my favorite.
7? 7 was your favorite because, number.
Yes. I was sitting there, I was like, because they were all just kind of, like, playing cards and being really quiet, and so I looked up, and I was like, is your game's rules, have you not talking? And they kind of all shook their head yes. I was like, new rule, everyone. You can't talk in any of your games. So I said this is now going to be included.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I wanted to. I've been playing a lot of these to kind of. We demonstrated a lot of them with the girls, and that's something that I wanted to talk about because I had a lot of fun with some of these games and wanted to make sure that people knew that, you know, the stuff that's out there, you might pass it over very quickly, but I think you should get your hands on it.
Well, one of the things that we, I didn't pass it over because I actually looked for this game. The Paco games are something that you'll find at your local Barnes & Noble. So if you go into Barnes & Noble, and a lot of times you'll see some different card games, you'll see a little box for Paco games. This was a Kickstarter from a couple years back, and they've put out 12 different games now. We picked up the game Boo just before Halloween 2 years ago, and that was a lot of fun. It's a game where players are given, I think everybody, both players, it's a two-player game, both players are given a set of graveyard little, it's kind of like sticks of gum. That's what the cards are. It's the size of, right, of a pack of gum. So everybody, both sides are given the half of the cards, and then you can put, they have certain rules on where you can place the cards. I think the ghosts cannot be staring at other ghosts. And if they are, you scare them. So if you put your ghost down and it stares at another ghost, you now flip that ghost over to your side. So you're basically scaring ghosts in a graveyard to your side. And it's kind of like this, it's got this grid formation where you're flipping over, kind of like Othello, you know, you're kind of flipping over groupings of ghosts to your side, either black or white. But yeah, Boo is a really cool game from Paco Games. And that's one that we throw it into Aaron's purse or throw it into the car and take it with us, especially during the fall.
That's really cool. Yeah, I think Paco Game was something I saw at Barnes & Noble when I was trying to find some other games, and it just kind of caught my eye, and I thought about this I thought about this class I was going to have to teach, so I did a little Board Game Geek research, picked up a handful, and yeah, we've had a good time with them. I'll be talking about some of them later, but those are definitely worth checking out. They all have they come from a company called Perplexed, and they all have three-letter names, and they're pretty cool. They've done a really good job of being creative with what you can do with cards, I think. One of the ones that really stands out to me is called Bus, and so you use I think 10 of the cards to make like two figure eights side by side, so you kind of like make four squares, and those are different streets, and then three of the cards are buses. And so they have on one end like a piece of street and then like a little bus. So you kind of move that on the road cards to make it look like the bus is on that particular part of the road. And the part of the game is you're using your bus to pick up passengers and drop them off. You pick them up at bus stop spots, and then you have to drop them off at different colored spaces on the other road pieces. And the passengers that you get determine like a speed limit, which is how many places you can move and how many points you get. But they do a really cool thing where you use part of the board to kind of keep track of if you've dropped your passengers off or not. So you move it from one side of the table to another in what they call like a virtual player area. And it's just really creative the way they've used a small amount of space and a small amount of components to do things that usually are represented by like cubes and stuff in other games.
Nice. So, Bob, you actually taught us how to play Mintworks at work one day. Tell us a little about Mintworks, because that was a micro game that came out a couple years ago and is still pretty popular. You can find it nowadays. It's the size of an Altoids tin.
It's literally the size of an Altoids tin. Actually, I think that was the play with the pieces, the worker placement pieces that came out with the Kickstarter. They actually looked, when you opened the tin, which is literally the size of an Altoids tin, the workers are mints. So if you weren't paying attention you wanted a mint and you happened to go for that box, you know, I mean, they literally look like...
You're going
to
be very sad.
Yeah, very bad thing for a child, I guess.
Very, very wood chippy.
Yeah. But yeah, they actually just came off of Kickstarter not too long ago with Mint Delivery, which is the second in the series, which is actually a pickup and delivery, whereas Mint Works, the original, is a worker placement game. But yeah, it's like, I don't even know how many mints come in the box, in the tin, but everybody gets a certain amount, and essentially you are trying to use these mints, or these workers, to place out on an initial set of laid worker placement places that are literally just cards. And then you can add in some extra cards for extra worker placement places as well for different variants in game. But you're basically trying to be the first person to obtain 7 victory points. Very by cool. Going in to places that might double your mints, your workers, or turn in a worker for to pick a card that you put into your hand that you can later build, then allocate mints or workers to another place to let you build that thing that's going to generate 1 victory point in the next round. It's just your very standard, good, solid worker placement game, but it's tiny.
Yeah, so while you can't take Architects of the West Kingdom to a park with you, you can take Mint Works.
Oh, I'll do it. So, I'll do it. Don't you dare me.
You'll do it.
I'll put it right on the grass.
You know I'll do it.
I'll put a blanket down, and I'll put it in the grass.
I'll bring some lunch, a couple of juice boxes.
I'll let the squirrels play with the pieces.
So but yes, it's Rick, very portable. It's very portable.
That's awesome. I actually have Mint Delivery. I haven't even played it yet. I opened it. Awesome little components, but I haven't played it yet, so yep. I need to bust.
It's
that
a little
one.
Bit get different to it. Come on. Whereas it's a different mechanic, but it's still very good.
Rick, we've got a couple companies that we want to point out that focus on microgaming. So, Button Shy Games. You actually spoke with Jason Tagmeyer a couple, probably about a year ago, about these wallet size games. So, tell us about what Button Shy does.
Yeah, their games can fit in a wallet, and that's how they deliver them. So it's just kind of a different thing than what Perplexed is doing. But very few cards. They also have print and play options, which normally I'm not a huge fan of. But when it's a game this small, like I went and I printed off and cut 3 games from them in an hour. And the results are pretty nice. I mean, they're not perfect or anything, but for what I needed to do for a classroom demo, they were great. But they were doing a game a month a while back. I don't know if they're still doing that this year or not, but it's just really impressive, the stuff, again, that they're able to do and how creative they're able to be. And then I would say a company that we're pretty big fans of here at One Board Family is Oink. And I believe they're a Japanese company, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And so
that
is Oink is one of my favorites because the way they package their boxes, they're just really small and compact. And the component
and
quality
nice
is so good.
The boxes, they're nice.
Very minimalist.
What do you call that sheen that's on that? But just like a nice glossy box.
Yeah.
And I mean, Deep Sea Adventure.
Deep Sea Adventure is amazing.
Who doesn't like Deep Sea Adventure?
Yep.
That game is pretty fun and simultaneously quite disheartening.
Yeah.
Why? You don't like rolling dice to make everyone drown?
Yeah.
I mean, not lately.
No. Not lately. Not right now.
Not lately.
Maybe later.
Yes.
And then, of course, all three of these companies, and then there are other ones that we haven't mentioned. But, Rick, we're actually going to go into our last segment of the show. You're going to talk about your favorite 5 micro games because you've been playing a lot of them. We figure, hey, you're kind of like an expert, you know?
Heck yes.
Yeah.
2 days now, I'm an expert.
Yeah, we're basically going to make you little cards that say expert micro gamer. So.
Yep.
Stick around for the next segment, and Rick is going to share his 5 favorite micro games.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. For this next segment, we're going to talk to Rick about his 5 favorite micro games. Rick?
Yes. And so, again, I've played quite a few in the past few days, and so but this is by no means a complete list. I've barely scratched the surface, but I think these can be some good games for you to kind of jump in. Now, the first one I kind of want to talk about is Fake Artist Goes to New York. And Ryan, I think you've played that one, have you not?
I have not, but this is an Oink game, and this is the one of the ones that I've wanted to play. It's basically like a bluffing game, correct?
Yeah, it's kind of like Spyfall a little bit,
okay.
But like the drawing version of that, where basically everybody except one person knows something that you're supposed to be drawing. So you draw a line, or it's basically a continuous stroke on a paper, and each person's supposed to add to the drawing. And by everybody does it twice, and by the end of the drawing, you're supposed to be able to figure out who was it that did not know what the item was.
Nice.
So very Spyfall-y, but to me, I think the problem with Spyfall, one of the bigger problems, is that you, if you're the spy, it's hard to know all the locations and to be looking down at that little grid without giving yourself
away.
That
is exactly the problem.
And so I think this kind of solves that a little bit.
So let me ask you this. We just got a copy of DC Spyfall from one of our Patreon backers. Very grateful. Thank you for the gift. And so one of our Patreon backers gave us DC Spyfall. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. But one thing I noticed that I didn't notice in the original Spyfall is that when you ask a person the question, you're supposed to hand the book, the center page of the book, you're supposed to hand the whole book to the person that you're asking the question of.
What?
Was that in the original Spyfall?
No.
I don't remember that.
That was not
okay,
in the original Spyfall.
So,
and you know what? They may have redone that. Because,
that's what I'm wondering.
Because of,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, and I think part of it, too, was like, even then it becomes a little bit difficult. So
it
I kind of like
yeah.
this idea of you just need a piece of paper and everybody has a card and you can kind of figure these things out.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few more cards and stuff than maybe you some people might not count it as a micro game, but it's in a small box. It's a game that I think you could take anywhere.
And Fake Artists can produce some hilarious results.
Oh, yes,
yes.
Definitely. And that's also part of the fun. It's kind of like with Telestrations
yep.
that, you know, we've all played
yep.
before where, you know, you write the sentence and then draw it and pass the paper and stuff. It's kind of got that feel to it. So I think it's one that if you can figure out a way to get it, sometimes it's on Amazon, sometimes it's not. It's a good way
I
to get
it. I always
your hands
see
on.
It in Barnes & Nobles.
Yeah, I do too.
They carry all the Oink games.
They do.
Those are good ones. Yeah, that's the same company that makes Deep
yep.
Sea Adventure.
Yeah.
So one that people should check out. Another one I wanted to talk about is from the Paco Games line. It's called Shh. And so this is a really basic one where every letter of the alphabet is on one of the tiny little cards. The art's pretty cool because it's like... it's those gum-shaped cards.
Yep.
It looks like a stick of gum, and at the top is just like a nice letter, solid color, and then it's got like a zoomed-in picture of an object that starts with that letter. So like a lemon, it's got like a green L at the top, and then there's a small picture of a lemon, like really zoomed in. It's really cool. I know I'm talking way too much about art for a tiny game, but I like it. It feels smooth. And then so everybody gets, you take all the consonants and pass them out to everybody. The vowels are put in the middle of the table, and then somebody starts and lays a letter down from their hand. Then, or they put a vowel out, and then the next person has to either play a card from their hand or put one of the vowels into the word. And so without talking, you're supposed to spell out a word by playing one letter at a time at the end of the word. And then if you ever feel like you've completed a word, somebody vote, the person whose turn it is can put their thumb up to say, like, we're done with the word, and people can thumbs up yes, thumbs down no, and then you keep moving on. And you get points for the vowels if you end up spelling, using them in a word that it has more than five letters, and the vowels are reusable, so you can use them in each word.
Well,
that
sounds interesting.
And you're just trying to get as many points as you can cooperatively.
How many does that play?
I think it plays 2 to 4.
2 to 4, okay.
Okay, Cool. Okay.
Yeah, and we played it with the students. One group, we got 6 points. That was not a good round.
Wow.
Because they decided X, Y, N was a word.
It is.
No.
It is, Rick.
It's not.
You don't know?
Yeah. Z-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n exhausted once the game was over. But another group, we did up to 17 points. We might have, you know, been a little... It's kind of like with Hanabi when sometimes you just kind of end up like, wink, wink, nod, nod, like, chill out there, bro. So we kind of did that a little bit. So that's a good one that I think, and it's part of the pack of games line, so you can probably pick it up at Barnes & Noble. Do you guys do many word games yourselves?
I was actually talking with a coworker. We were talking about word games, and they were talking about how they used to love Scrabble, and then they played Bananagrams over the holidays with family, and they were like, I really liked it. And I was like, nah, Bananagrams is my jam. That is, I think, I like Bananagrams better than something Scrabble. Like Scrabble. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
I think probably one of Unspeakable Words was pretty fun. It's like a Cthulhu-based word game where you're putting words together. But I think my favorite word game is probably Tim Fowler's paperback series.
Good call.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, there's something about making Scrabble into a deck builder that just feels right.
Yep, and the art's
cool. Oh, yeah, the art is so cool.
Yeah. So kind of sticking with that pack of games line is Dig, which has some really cute artwork. It's basically a dog digging up bones, and so your markers are... You lay out a bunch of cards in a row, and some of them are bowls, and some of them are they have little swirls on them that show you that there is one of two different color bones in there, and you are using your dog card, and you're moving up and down the line of cards, and the amount of you're trying to dig up the bones, and the amount of movement you can do on a turn is limited by how many bones you currently have in your possession. And you're trying to get the bones from the ground back to the bowl that matches the color of those bones.
Nice.
And one thing that's really cool about it is when you dig up a bone, you take it and put it on top of your card sideways, so it's like you're carrying it. But then the cards that are further away from the doghouse card, so like you start, the doghouse card is on the right and you go to the left. So the card that's furthest to the left replaces the bone that you've placed, picked up. And so the board starts to shrink and you play until all the bones are gone and there's just bowls. And then from there, the bowl that is closest to the doghouse, all the bones of that color are worth 5 points. And then all the next bowl's bones are worth 4. And so what that does is it actually adds a really interesting strategy to it of like, you know, what bones do you want to dig up? And are you digging them up because you want to try to get points? Or if I do it at just the right time, I can move a bowl that's further back where it started closer to the doghouse to make my bones worth more points. And so, but it would require you to set it up like several moves in advance. So it's definitely possible to play this as a light family game, but if you wanted to add some strategy and if you wanted to think through this, you can make a heck of a thinking game here. And it was, it was really cool. The art's really nice and it's really quick to pick up, and plays in about 6-7 minutes. So it's a good one that I think, liked that one a lot for families.
That's
quick.
That's one that I've seen referenced by a bunch of people because Dig seems to be a very, very popular one with the Paco Games line. So,
and that's the one that I remember the most. That stuck out to me. Okay. I don't own any of those games, but it's hard to miss those games because they're so cool looking. It's like, what is this pack of gum in this board game section, you know? So, but Dig is the one that actually stuck out in my mind.
Yep.
And it's crazy that, like I said, quick play, but there really is some strategy that you can find in that. And it's, you know, with these games, honestly, for me, it's sometimes hard to just find a place on the shelf where I'm going to actually see it. You know, when I see a big old box on the shelf, I'm like, yeah, let's play that. And it's quick to pass up.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that.
But this is one that I should, it's definitely one that I would love to play when, to start the game, the night off when I have, you know, a couple over, when we have a couple over later.
What's
you know?
The price yeah. point on that, Rick? Do you know?
These are $5 a
five
piece.
$5. Wow.
And
okay.
Yeah, I think they're $4.99.
I might have to grab one just to see, play it at work just to see how it plays with the,
yeah, I think Dig, you know what? I think Dig and the thing about Dig is it keeps a small amount of space. There's some others. Boo still isn't that bad, but like you know the space that Dig is going to occupy. Yeah. Bus, and then there was another game we played called Hue, which is a little more complex, I think. It requires a little more spatial reasoning. Yeah. They can spread out a little bit more, but I think Dig, I really think this would be a good game to break out at yeah. lunch okay. and get your coworkers to
excellent.
Play. A couple more. Stew is one from Button Shy Games that I almost backed on Kickstarter when it first launched, but I used the print and play and got it, and I'm a little disappointed that I didn't pick it up because it is a really good game. Mm-hmm. It was the one that I had the least expectations for because, like you and I talked about before the podcast started, Ryan, Sprawlopolis
yep.
is a game that's gotten a lot of attention, and we played that one, and it might have been the gaming. You know, I was playing it with some students who weren't as much gamers. That one's cooperative and a little complex, and you've got to be thinking about a lot of stuff at once. Stew is a bluffing game in which we're saying you're out in the woods making some stew. There's some animals around that you got to keep away from the stew, and you're trying to make this like nice, robust stew that's worth 12 points. And whenever so you take all the ingredients like carrots and there's a chicken and potatoes and stuff, and they're all worth points. Some of them are just worth regular points. Some of them, like the potatoes, you know, the more potatoes you have in it, the more points they are worth. And you take all the ingredient cards and put them in a stack, and one at a time, on your turn, you draw a card, look at it, and decide, am I putting it in the stew pot or am I giving it to one of the animals that's out there? And you always play every card face down. And so on your turn, you can do that, and you keep going until somebody calls stew. And at that point, you take every card that's in the stew pot, flip them over, and then any animals that go uncovered, they'll take stuff out of the pot. And there's one of those animals is actually a person called the Vagabond. And if there's chicken in your pot, he's going to eat your stew, and you lose 3 points. But if there's not chicken in the pot, for some reason, he's a big chicken fan, and you actually get 3 points if there's no chicken in your pot. And so it really becomes a bluffing game and a limited knowledge game where you have to think, like, what cards could they have possibly put in the stew pot? What, you know, a lot of ours were really close, and, you know, you felt like you squeezed out a victory. One of our favorite things was there's a rock that's worth -3 points. So I guess the assumption is like you're throwing it at the like animals to try to get kind of scare them away. But all my students really love putting the rock in the stew so that when they draw it and they're like, no, somebody put the rock in the stew. We lost 3 points. It's really cool. And there was a lot more to it than I was expecting. And we had a really good time with that one.
Very cool.
Yeah. And the artwork is really cool. It kind of feels like a like old-timey Western vibe.
That's
kind of
funny
thing.
Because
really
I was
cool
just going to mention that because I had not forgotten about, but thank you for reminding me about Button Shy. There was a card drafting game that they put out a couple years ago called Circle the Wagons. It was a Western theme, and it was two-player, and I'd been really interested in it, and I just never picked it up. I might actually go and grab it now just because you reminded me of Button Shy.
Yeah, we did the print and play on that one. It's only two-player, so that's one we didn't get to. But, yeah, that one has some pretty interesting
stuff.
Did
you like it?
Sprawlopolis is – I haven't played it yet, unfortunately. Okay. Sprawlopolis seems to have a very – it's similar.
Oh.
To that, except it's competitive. Sprawlopolis is cooperative.
Oh, okay.
Circle of the Wagons is competitive.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So they're pretty similar.
Interesting.
And then my top micro game is, of course, Love Letter.
Yeah.
Love Letter was one of my first purchases whenever I really started getting into board games because it was so cheap and so highly rated. And everybody I play that game with loves it. My students, for some reason, were upset, I guess because it was one of the only games that looked like in a board game box. It was up on my shelf, and they were like, "Teach us Love Letter." And they had rotated away from my table for a while and then came back, and they're like, "You told us you'd teach us Love Letter." So we played. I didn't think they were going to enjoy it because the artwork doesn't feel like teenage, like teenage girls would enjoy it. Right. Like, it feels kind of fancy and stuff. But they loved it. Like, the second that one girl had the guard and played the guard card and said, "Do you have the Baron?" And the other girl went, "No way," and was out of the game. Like, they were hooked.
That's awesome.
For those that don't know, Love Letter is a 17-card game where there are different roles on each of the cards, and they're worth different point values, and your goal is to either eliminate all the competition or to have the highest value card at the end of the round. So the cards also have an action. You hold one, and then you draw a card and play either one's action. So a guard lets you guess the card that another player is holding, and if you guess correctly, that player is out of the game. A baron allows you to compare your card to another player's card, and whichever one is the highest number, the lower number is eliminated. And so it really has some nice deduction elements. It's quick. It's simple. You know, you play it twice and then you know what it is. And when we first got that game, I think Sarah and I played it like three nights in a row because she was hooked. And, you know, it doesn't make it to the table all that often anymore just because we've got newer stuff. But I know if we ever sat down and said, "Hey, do you want to play Love Letter?" she'd probably be interested.
So, Rick, you being a fan of Love Letter, I'm hoping I know the answer to this question. You've played Batman Love Letter, right?
I haven't,
no.
But I'm going to go ahead and say it's the better version because it has Batman.
No, you need to remedy that.
I like Adventure Time Love Letter.
You need to remedy that.
Don't you have the Batman version, Ryan?
No, I don't.
Oh, I thought
you need
did.
To nope, remedy I've, that, Rick. Yeah. I'm telling you.
But Adventure Time is good?
Adventure Time one's really cool. I like it. There's a point where one of the rule changes is Finn and Jake are actually, if you get Finn and Jake in the same turn and you can use them the same turn, you actually win, hands down. Doesn't matter how many players are left in the round.
That's funny.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they have a Love Letter Premium that came out last year that adds extra roles. Do you
I
like it?
I did like it, and the components are ridiculous.
Yeah, it allows you to play Love Letter with up to
and
eight
people.
And it's
beautifully done. It's probably what you would say overly done.
Overdone, but, yeah.
Overdone.
But yeah, you know how some things are like, okay, guys, you didn't have to do all this.
You didn't. We bring down the price.
Like, are these actual gold coins?
Nice. Right. Like, when you're hitting $32 and you're like, guys, this is still Love Letter. Let's not like lose our minds.
Yeah, but
here.
It is nice looking, and for you know, they know who they're selling to. You know, It's the same thing we were talking about before, where I like to bling out my games. So if I can make it look even nicer, then I'm a sucker for that. You know.
Yeah.
My favorite thing is that their Love Letter, the creators made a wedding gift. Version to where like that's the thing that people take home, the favor.
Wow. Yeah.
And so it was like in little white bags, and you know, the princess card, she was in a wedding dress.
I didn't know that.
So I thought that, I was like, you know what, man, if I had been in games a little bit more, of course it came out after I got married, but I was like, this, if I was getting married, this would be what it is. Like,
okay.
There we go.
Very cool.
So that is my list, guys.
Like it. You have some good games on there, man. Micro gaming is a lot of fun, and one of the things I like about micro games is the portability of the game and how this can be something that you introduce to a person over dinner or just have fun with when you go to the beach or at a restaurant or a cafe. It's a lot of fun, and take gaming on the go. Yeah. So if you want to share your favorite micro game, do that in the comments below. Thanks so much for listening today. Hey, Bob, thanks for joining us on this podcast, dude. Appreciate you stepping up, man.
We love our Bob time.
Yeah. So until next time, we will see you at the table.
Punchboard Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.